I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
How many times can one man leave you breathless? Get on his bad side, your number is up. Dalton is James Bond 007. License to Kill.
Hello and welcome to Smirch Pod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Rain. This week, we'll be travelling to Isthmus with revenge very much on our minds. And our target, very much like our friend, won't have a leg to stand on. Yes, it's License to Kill. And joining me to throw wet pasta at armed guards is comedian Steve Hall. Hello, Steve.
Hello. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice again.
That sounded quite emotional. That sounded like one of us was in prison the way I said that.
Are they treating you well?
As well as I can hope. As well as I deserve for my crimes.
Imagine if old Terry Waiter had clean feed during his imprisonment.
I was pleasantly surprised to see he was still alive.
He's still alive, yeah. He can only sit by a radiator these days, but he's all right.
I've moved house since I last spoke to you.
Have you?
So this is all, we've moved to Oxford.
Oh.
And bearing in mind that the film we're talking about involves vengeance, the thing that clinched us moving house was we had a basement flat.
Right.
And from the top floor flat into our garden came crashing down not only a window, but the entire window frame.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And it landed and exploded on a spot that the kids had been playing on like 15 minutes earlier.
Oh, my God.
And it actually like demolished a clothes horse and that had sheets on it. And so like the tears in the sheets are like indicating what would have happened to the kids.
Oh, Jesus.
So it kind of spurred us to move, and they offered us £100 by way of compensation.
Wow, that's amazing.
So So it's interesting watching License to Kill and thinking, I'm going to take a leaf out of Sanchez's book. This is the way people should operate. So I'm going to arrive at our landlord's house with that weird bit of twiggy thing that he hits Lupe with.
Bigfoot's dick.
Yeah.
Well, had you seen License to Kill before?
I hadn't seen it in years. So, because again, we're of a similar age.
Yeah.
And so this was. I remember not being allowed to see it in the cinema.
Yeah,
and being too scared. Yeah, and being too scared to try and get into a 15 at age 12 or 13.
Yeah.
But I remember weirdly. I've taken delivery of 15 boxes from that. My mum. I had a load of old shit in my mum's shed, a shed I bought for that mad old bitch. And she's finally had enough. For some reason, she's decided that enough's enough, and it's all been delivered to me this morning. And there's like old enemies and old Roy the Rovers. But then there's a couple of old Spectrum users. And there's kind of, I'm sure there's like an advert for like the License to Kill game, but certainly the poster is like, having not thought about it in years, I went, oh yeah, this is all flooding back. Like I'd forgotten quite how much I fancied Carrie Lowell.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's kind of the pinnacle of the Bond girls. And in fact, I realised looking at her again, she looks incredibly like at one of my long-term girlfriends in my early 20s, and I realised that it was an accidental homage to License to Kill.
Because that game you mentioned, fucking hell, that thing was horrible.
I don't think I ever owned it. Was it a bad game?
It was really bad. Yeah, I owned it because I was a huge Bond fan at this point, and this was the first film I couldn't see in the cinema.
Because
I was 12, so I had the game, and I'd play it obsessively, but it was shit. It was like an over-the-top... You know, looking bird's eye view down, you'd be in a helicopter and they'd be firing stuff at you and you had to avoid them, and it was so annoying.
Which is interesting. Obviously, the GoldenEye game then goes on to become iconic.
Mm. Yeah, it sums it up.
My mum didn't. She didn't return my Spectrum. I've got a 48K Spectrum in her shed, and I think my brother's going to try and sell it.
Mm. Yeah. I've got a plus two in the loft if you want that as well.
It's quite nice. I had all my old fighting fantasy books came back.
Oh, nice!
And I started going. They stand up. They've stood the test of time.
Turn to page 42. Oh, I died of autoerotic asphyxiation. I wasn't expecting that. but License to Kill kicks off.
Yes.
With Sanchez, Franz Sanchez, who's kind of like he is
one of the great villains. I should say we've been trying to make this happen for several months.
Yeah.
So I've watched this about three times during lockdown, but now not for a few weeks. So I'm going off my notes. And in some cases, the notes I've taken are fucking indecipherable. So I can only apologise. It's like what seemed like a funny little segue now just looks like the ramblings of a drunk man.
But you're right, though. He's a fantastic villain.
He's Robert Davi. He's obviously this and Die Hard, and which very different roles. But it's interesting that I was reading an article about how dermatologists have said that memorable movie villains are often made memorable by their slightly nasty skin conditions. And so as someone whose teenage years were riddled with acne, it's weird seeing his pock marks and kind of going... Like his misery, presumably in his formative years, has made he's one of the most menacing villains.
Good God, yeah. I mean, he was in Goonies as well.
Yeah. Oh, is he? I've not seen that in so long.
Yeah, he's one of the Fratelli brothers. He's the one who likes Chunk when he's telling the story about pretending to vomit on everybody.
And it's kind of interesting because obviously he is, in real life, he is a full-on Trump lunatic now.
He is, I'm afraid,
And to the point where I was like I was looking at his tweets thinking, am I going to find something funny that he's tweeted that would be nicely humorous to talk about on this? And it's fucking horrible. It's where you kind of go, I have to walk away from this.
He's not James Woods, but he's close.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's a very good singer. So he does a lot of Sinatra.
Yeah.
And there's a video of him where he's sung a song about the coronavirus. And it goes, coronavirus, stay away from the door. And it's quite a jolly sort of bit of ridiculousness. But even then, the Trumpian stuff can't help but come out. So he says to the coronavirus at the end of the song, go back where you belong.
Right.
And it's just, he has to bring kind of immigrant hate bashing into it.
He's also rocking a very, very bad wig these days.
Yeah.
He's got that Travolta-esque wig where there's no decipherable hairline. It's just this thing on his head. Yeah. But he's arrived.
Yeah. Because is this unusual? Is it unusual that you see the villain before you see Bond? Is that...
Yeah, it's fairly unusual. Yeah, I would say it is. But he turns up because he rarely leaves Isthmus, which is the fictional South American country he's from. Because he wants to go, he travels to Key West to get Lupe, his mistress, who's presumably flown there on her own to have an affair with a bloke.
Yeah, it's quite a sex positive film, this, in that it doesn't judge the fact that she's just fucked off to Key West to get her jollies in. Sorry. In terms of establishing what a weirdo, it's really menacing as an opening scene.
It's horrible.
Because he gets the weird rubber thing out.
Yeah.
Sort of that kind of crocodile dildo that he...
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be a lizard's tail.
Oh, is that? I see, right.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be maybe the last lizard he had.
Yeah.
No, I keep the tail. It's good for hitting people with.
A lizard's tail sounds like a really bleak Disney film.
It does, doesn't it? Like or a horrible medical condition. Yeah, I see you've... I'm afraid you've got stage 3 lizard tail.
Yes, have you been shagging Lupe? She's been...
Snooker Lupe. much like Greta Garbo, he never leaves home, but he's travelled there this time to get her. And like you say, it's horrible because he says to her, did he promise you his heart? And yes. His number two is called Dario. It's played by a very young Benicio del Toro.
Yes, who... And they have a lovely thing every time Benicio del Toro gets his knife out. It has a swishing sound.
Yes.
It's like a little audio cue. And I think it's meant to be menacing.
Yeah.
But it comes across like he's a character in Hello, Hello.
Yeah.
The way they time it. So it's the knife man equivalent of him going, it is I, Leclerc.
They also do, every time he smiles, he's got like a gold tooth or silver tooth or whatever it is. And it looks like they've kind of superimposed a little glint on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or shone a light on it or something. So it's quite weird. But yeah, he takes the guy outside and they're going to cut his heart out.
Yeah. And again, just the menace. Because I was reading somebody's, there were like cuts made to this, weren't there? So I was trying to work out whether the versions I've seen in the past were like were probably the slightly tamer versions.
Yeah.
Because there's one or two clips I've seen on YouTube where I was going, I don't remember that being that nasty. But whereas this is all done with suggestion, you don't have to see it. You just know that
as he's whipping her. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I should say this is a really good film.
Yeah, it is. It's my favourite.
Yeah, it's I rewatched The Living Daylights as well, and was pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed that.
Yeah, but
this is just it's just terrific.
And it's totally bombed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge summer though. 1989. You had Batman and Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade and Ghostbusters 2, and they decided to put it up against them, which was a terrible idea.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because Timothy Dalton's haircut is one of the few shit things in it. Like I think he's a brilliant Bond, but the hair looks like the hair of just a 47-year-old accountant.
I'm afraid it does, especially when he slicks it back later. But talking of Bond, he's in a car going to a wedding. Felix's wedding.
Yes.
And I wouldn't want Bond anywhere near my wedding, really.
Yeah. Again, watching it during the lockdown, it did fit. Like when you see him like that and he's on his way to a wedding, you sort of wonder, has he been furloughed?
Is he now a chauffeur?
Yeah. He's actually, that limo has to stop off and do a few Amazon drops.
But they're going to the wedding and then a DEA helicopter comes down. And says to Felix, we've got Sanchez. And he's like, do you have the green light? And he's like, we're green. And then Bond says, oh, no, I'm coming with you. If I don't get you to the wedding, I'm a dead man. It's okay, but strictly as an observer. Yes, and they leave poor Sharky on his own.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Sharky does a lot of in this film.
He does.
Because Della is waiting at the church, and her dad does it. It's a really good pissed off dad face.
Mm. Proper psycho.
Like these fucking secret agents.
I told you it was a bad idea.
Yeah, and presumably Bond has organised the stag, so they're probably recovering from the stag do.
Yeah, can you fucking imagine what it was like? Human centipedes. So they go off in the helicopter and they land Key West just as Sanchez is leaving, basically.
It's got really good action scenes, this film. It's just a terrific action scene.
Yeah. And I said it on the podcast before, but I don't care, I'll say it again. The first footage I saw of this was on Film 89, obviously. And I don't think I particularly realised it was there were clips of it ready to be available. And I remember turning on, and it was literally the bit where Bond jumps out of the helicopter, does a forward roll, and then shoots from behind a barrel. And I just remember thinking, fucking hell, that looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is like the action movie era, you know, because we're of a similar age, so all those action movies that came out, you were so exciting. And now a Bond film is like a proper action movie.
I remember when I used to watch Bond films on telly, I had this little narcissistic thing in my brain that was like going, I could be Bond, and I would like try and work out what are the things I couldn't do. I remember like, oh, well, I could do that. And then there would be something like, oh, no, I couldn't do that. And I remember that forward roll reminded me of that, going, oh, yeah, I would probably struggle to jump out of a helicopter.
I think I'd be shot about four times before I landed.
Yeah, or I'd do my knee.
Yeah,
and I'd just be going, I'm fine. You guys go on ahead.
Would you style it out?
I would try to, and then someone would go, you've obviously. I would try to style it, and I'd be detected within 3 seconds.
I'd just be hiding behind the barrel, crying and holding my knee. Oh God, it really hurts. I'll do me observing from here. Yeah. So they catch.
Because there's a brilliant. It's one of the first times that you hear Felix. The way he says Sanchez.
Yeah.
And it really reminds me of that episode of Futurama where he goes, Robot House.
Cheese it!
Robot House!
Yeah. But Sanchez is a bit clever because as they're hightailing out there, he gets out early and runs off to go and get in a plane. So they're chasing the car without him in it. But because Bond stopped to speak to Lupe because she's a woman...
Jesus, James, how are your balls not completely empty after the stag do? you're shooting pure dust, man.
He's like smoke signalling Felix with his cock. Yeah, he speaks to Lupe, sees the marks on her back, and she quite rightly doesn't want to talk to him, particularly after just being beaten up. But then they notice that Sanchez has got in a plane. So Bond's like, I've got an idea. And then he really takes over. He's like ordering them about. He's like, get in the fucking helicopter, all of you. And they take off and they chase him. And that's the bit where he gets lowered down.
This is just a brilliant action scene. It's really, like, even 30 years on, I'm still really gripped by it.
Performed by the best aerial stuntman in the world with the best name, which is B.J. Worth, which is a great name, isn't it?
Terrific. And which alongside, obviously, Grandel Bush.
Yes.
Later on in the film. There was a film over lockdown. I'd never seen the film The Hit. Is it Stephen Frears? It's like Tim Roth and John Hurt.
Oh, no, I've not seen it.
It's like 1984. It's an absolutely brilliant film. Hmm. But there's a priest... And this is almost all I can remember. In the credits, there's the bloke who plays the priest. His name is Juan Calot. and oh my God.
That reminds me, the director of Police Academy 6 has the best name. His name is, of course, Peter Boners.
Oh, fantastic.
But it's not good as Juan Calot, though. I'll be honest.
I used to work in a post room for a mobile phone company, and we used to like sellotape our favourite names to the wall. And there was a bloke And I've looked him up. He exists. I think he's like got a website. So I'm not. I don't think I'm betraying any privacy laws. Mm. There's a bloke. His name is Kenneth Lingus. So.
Oh, that's amazing.
To the point where you're kind of going, is that, has he changed it by deed poll? And I, from what I could work out, and I've spent a lot of time trying to find, I think it's his real name.
I bet he's got a license plate that just says Fanny Man. So they go fishing and Bond puts the line round the end of Sanchez's tail.
And there's some really good double takes in this film, and Sanchez delivers. It's a really good little mini double take that he does.
But then you get this really nice bit where him and Felix then skydive down to the church. It's bloody lucky they're over the church.
Yeah, well, it's amazing that the fact that Della sees them, she knows she's there, so she's got amazing eyesight.
Yeah, which, you know, sadly didn't ever come into being used later.
No, indeed.
we get a nice shot, which I really like, of the ushers carrying their parachutes in. Like,
yeah, it's a really nice, there's a lot of really, really nice touches in that, and that's... Mm. That's one of them. So, and then it's into the credits. It's weird, like watching the credits. I forget there's certain Proustian rushes, and I forget that some of my earliest boners were just watching the credits to Bond on telly. It's a shame because obviously, for various for understandable reasons, Bond doesn't get shown on telly that much anymore, or the old ones, because it's a minefield of who's going to be offended by what.
Yeah.
But I forget that, a silhouette of a tit was, mind-blowing to an impressionable seven-year-old.
Yeah, I tell you what, kids, you listening these days, you kids, you had it easy. We had to go with catalogues and silhouettes of tits.
Yeah, you had to sit on Boxing Day hiding your boner while your granddad dozed in the sofa.
And that wasn't even when Bob was on. You were just attracted to your granddad.
Yeah. Yeah, that was EastEnders. That was the worst.
That was just your granddad had a really nice ass.
Yeah. He had a really soothing snore, very erotic snore. He had.
He'd be on the ASMR nights for the erotic ones. Listen to your granddad's snore. So after the credits, which is significant credits because they're Maurice Binder's last one.
Right.
And I think he'd only not done one before, so this was his last. He died shortly after this. And, so after that, Sanchez is being talked to by Everest McGill.
Yes, it's one of those, like, I'd forgotten that he was in it. Like, I remembered him. I'd been really into Twin Peaks, so I'd remembered him from Twin Peaks.
Yes.
And there's he's in this as well.
He was in so much around this time, because I remember him as the werewolf in Silver Bullet. Sorry, spoiler. The People Under the Stairs.
Mm.
And Dune, of course. It certainly is that. But he says to Sanchez that he's facing 900 years in jail.
Yeah.
Are they going to keep him alive to make sure he does it? Because you see this a lot in American stuff. When someone has done a lot of murders, they say you are going to be in prison for 400 years. I think, well... Just say life.
Yeah, they just have to leave of just a mouldering corpse.
Yeah,
in there for because this, and I think does it takes place at the, is it the seizure pier?
Mm.
I think it says, which sounds like an old folks' home.
It does, rather, doesn't it? Or it sounds like something from Carry On.
Yeah.
But he says not even one of his famous million-dollar bribes will get him out of this. So in a move that the kids today would probably call badass. Sanchez says 2 million. Yeah. Not in a Sean Connery voice, but 2 million to anyone that springs me. And Killifer's like, God damn, you make me sick. But secretly he's thinking, yeah, right.
Yeah. You've found, I wish I could quit you. You've found my weakness. It's timesing things by two.
But he says, all that scumbag money won't do you a bit of good here. But yeah, you're on.
My name's Jason Fleming. The More Than My Past podcast will see me talking to a wide range of inspiring people. People who have confronted and overcome addiction or imprisonment or both and turned their lives around.
I did mad things that was hurting myself and hurting other people.
Everybody grows up in a house called normal. Heroin addiction and chaos was my normal.
Some people don't understand the word moderation, and I was definitely one of those people.
The More Than My Past podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He then, Kellifer then pops into the wedding where James has been told to go and get Felix because he's missing everything because he's working.
Yeah.
And he's then, in his office with Pam.
And is this the bit where we see Bond kiss Della? It's like a little bit too lingeringly.
Yeah. She says, thank you.
It reminded me of Marlene kissing Del Boy in front of Boise, the way it just lingers just that tiny bit too long.
Yeah,
but then, but presumably Felix is like, you know, that's fine. You kiss her, Della. The things we did on that stag.
Mm. I mean, let's face it; they've probably both had Della at the same time. It's a horrible world back then.
That's why it's so devastating when she goes. They both go, oh, the middle of our wobbly H has gone.
Middle of wobbly H. I haven't heard that before. Oh my god. So he goes in to see Felix, and Felix is talking to Pam, and he's like, I better go, you know. And then Bond sees Pam's a bit like, oh, hello. And then he hands Felix the knife, and Felix puts his CD that he's taken out of his giant Laserdisc player, which looks really funny, this tiny little disc in this player.
There is this line, like, he literally says something like, just let me save this.
Yeah.
So it's, and is this the first time we hear someone say plomo or platter? Like lead or silver.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right.
I think because in terms of the really nice touches, there are so many brilliant lines in this. And that's one where it comes up a few times. But again, it's just there's so many lovely bits like that where you're just kind of going, this has really been finessed.
Yeah. And they did the really good idea of thinking they have a revenge film. And then the producer and writer, co-writer of this, Michael G. Wilson, suddenly remembered Yojimbo.
Yeah.
And thought that would be a really good way of doing it, of someone going in to an operation, an organisation, and rotting it from the inside out.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really good idea, because it could have been so easy just to have him do it like Commando, where he turns up and just kills everybody with explosions. Yeah. But I like the way that it's very Bondy. And also Yojimbo, the Kawasaki film. Not Kawasaki, that's a motorbike. Kurosawa film. Of course, the sequel was less successful, Yojimbo and the Jet Set, where he was a plane at a Japanese airport. Yojimbo! That's a deep dive for me.
I was at the BFI quite recently did a Leone season. So I'd never seen Fistful of Dollars, which I think is the original, well, not the original remake of Yojimbo, but it's obviously it's...
Yeah.
And it is, it's such a basic, it's such a simple plot line, but all of those films, they execute it so brilliantly.
Yeah, and then really Walter Hill remade it again, didn't he, with Last Man Standing, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Which I really like. It's a Western, but set in the 30s, basically.
Right. I don't think I've seen that.
It's good. Yes. Bruce Willis comes into a town and it's these mobsters controlling it, and Christopher Walken plays the heavy. It's very good. So, yeah, they then go and cut the cake.
There's a nice bit of foreshadowing. Because is it Felix says, we're not going fishing on... Or is it Della says, we're not going fishing on my honeymoon?
Yeah, no, you're not, love. No. Well, Felix is a bit.
Yeah.
And they give Bond his present, which is a lighter, which again is a little bit of a foreshadowing, which is inscribed James, love always, Della and Felix, brackets the wobbly H. But the, again, with foreshadowing, is that when he lights it, it's set too high and it just bursts out, which would have been great if it took his eyebrows and he was all singed.
Yeah, it could have saved that haircut.
Not gonna have to get my bloody haircut. Yeah, so meanwhile, back on Sanchez being taken out, my favourite question from the press as he's being loaded into the van is one of them says, are you really Colombian? I always enjoy that.
I missed that detail. That's really funny.
It's brilliant. He gets put in the back of the van and they drive off with Killifer in the front. And they get to a certain point in the bridge where the bridge is slightly out. There's a bit of the railing missing. And he smacks the guard that's driving right in the face. And the guard just, it's really funny though, because of the way they do it. You know, he obviously got the makeup on already.
Yeah.
And as the gun hits him, he turns. You can kind of see for a second he already had that makeup. But then he pulls the steering wheel and they drive it straight into the water.
And it's, again, it's pretty well done, this, because obviously it's very reminiscent of Mission Impossible Fallout. But other than the fact that the water of the sea is weirdly clear.
Yeah,
it feels like a swimming pool. It's pretty well done.
Yeah, and loads of divers come in and save them. They give them both breathing apparatus and take them away in a wave crest submarine. And you get this lovely scene of just like helicopters all over the water and everyone trying to have a look down. It's awesome. Reminds me a bit of a few years later they did this, well, not a similar thing, but they used the same location for True Lies.
Yes, yeah,
that big long bridge. It's very cool. Meanwhile, the wedding's finished. Bond's leaving, and Della says, by the way...
Has she given him the garter? Does she give him the garter?
Yeah. Yeah,
dirty old bitch.
As he catches it, it sounds like a packet of crisps.
Yeah.
And, she says, there you go. And he says, thanks, but no.
Yeah.
And then she's like, it's a really...
I listened to the one you did when you covered this before with Chris. But it bears repeating. It's one of the great no's.
Yeah.
Of in all cinema.
It is. Thanks, but no.
No.
No. And she says, did I say something wrong? And then Felix says he was married once. And she was killed on the wedding day. Imagine that. Imagine if that happened. Wouldn't that be awful? And she's like, yeah, that'd be awful. Imagine having a lovely wedding and then being murdered. Anyway, let's go in the bedroom. And she starts talking about how he's got a bad back. This is the stag night coming back again.
Yeah.
Like, oh. Yeah, I was on the end of a human centipede. I was on the floor for ages. Killed. As they go,
there's a lovely bit when Bond leaves, his car turns left at about 5 miles an hour, but they still put a screeching of wheels in.
That's true. Yeah, he wasn't in gear.
Yeah.
He was thinking. He was sniffing the garter. Like, oh. But as they go in the room, Felix is knocked out with a gun to the back. And, Della, unfortunately, is murdered and presumably raped horribly.
Yes, it's implied, isn't it?
Yeah.
That they do it. Because I've been listening to the audiobook of Ted Kotcheff's autobiography.
Hmm.
And he says that, in that, he says that he was originally offered License to Kill.
Oh, really? Because he did First Blood, didn't he?
Yes, and... Wake in Fright, which is one of my favourite films.
Oh yes, yeah.
But I would have loved to have seen what he'd have done with License to Kill, because I like to think that he would have then turned Della into a Weekend at Bernie's affair. And her part would have been much bigger throughout the film.
All the way through the film, yeah. That'd have been a lovely little farcical scene with Bond having to keep her upright as he's driving.
Yeah. And Felix just being quite happy, just like he's got a nagging awareness that she's not saying much.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to know. But he wakes up in the aquarium, Milton Crest's warehouse aquarium thing. And, confronted with Sanchez and Dario. And that's where Dario says the horrible line, don't worry.
Yeah.
We gave her a nice honeymoon. It's like, oh, God. Yeah.
And he really, Del Toro is so great, but he really lingers. It's like, honeymoon. Yeah. Like, I wonder how many takes they did that. Going, can you keep it up? Can you do it for a minute, Benicio?
In the behind-the-scenes documentary, they talk about how, because Robert Davi in that comes across really well. Like he just loved doing the film. Like it was a real thrill for him.
Yeah,
but he was a prankster, Steve. You know, when you hear about people on sets who are pranksters and everybody's always like, yeah, he was always playing pranks, and the De Toro says it, and you can just tell behind his eyes, he's thinking, and I fucking hated him. and he was apparently, Davi was running all sorts of poker schools and stuff and fleecing people for money.
Wow.
Which is a shame how he's turned out, because as I say, in the documentary, he seems like a really nice fella.
Yeah. That is a shame. It's one of those phrases, we gave her a nice honeymoon, that you want to, like, it's difficult not to drop in conversation.
Yeah.
Like, I found myself wanting to say to my wife, do you remember our honeymoon?
Oh, no, sorry, that was my last wife.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so and, Felix, and it's because they also say in this thing, they say to Felix, this is nothing personal, it's purely business.
Yeah.
And you want to go, what, so raping someone's wife is business, is it?
It's a different world down there, Steve. They operate differently. It's a man's world. But he gets Felix and puts him on a chain and lowers him down into a tank that's full of sharks.
And is this where Killifer says, 2 mil is a hell of a chunk of dough?
Yeah, because Killifer just comes out and stands in front of him and just like rubbing it in a bit, really.
And what did he say? And does Felix say something like, "What killing me won't change anything? Something like, won't change anything.
Yeah.
And then it's the line, there are worse things than dying.
Yeah.
And he then forces him to watch Spectre.
After Quantum of Solace.
Yeah.
No.
But you this bastard.
This is the bit that was cut to buggery because it's now been put back in. You can actually see his leg being bitten off.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it first came out, he just goes down into the tank and then he says, see you in hell, and then it cuts. But now it's been restored because obviously we're a bit more laid back culturally now. I don't know. It's probably still 15, but...
Because I've only seen the leg on YouTube. I've definitely in the ones I've watched, I've seen the edited version. And so when you first see the leg, it's still got teeth to it. It's one of the reasons it stands up so well. It's got that Daniel Craig style harshness to it.
Well, this is it. I mean, that was Dalton's idea from the get go, but he was 20 years too early, basically. Yeah. Which is, you know, when Daniel Craig did it, everyone was like, oh, he brings such a hard edge. It's so refreshing. It's like, it's done 20 years ago and no one liked it. So, yeah, but on the Blu-ray, certainly, when you watch that scene, you see the leg coming off and, yeah, it's horrible. So Bond, the next day, next morning, he arrives at the airport. He's supposed to be on his way to Istanbul. And there's loads of police everywhere. And he's like, oh, what's all that about? And the woman says,
shit, they've caught up with us from the stag too. I thought I'd got away with it.
Oh, God, it's the midget police. I only threw one. I didn't burn him. But she says, some big drug dealer's escaped. And he's like, oh, fuck. So he races to Felix, then finds Della on the bed, not looking too well. She's dead.
And he briefly thinks, should I? No.
She's a bit too cold. disgusting. But then he goes into the living room and he sees a plastic bag on the chair. And he peels it open and Felix is inside, looking very dead, obviously. But he finds a note that says, and I love this, this is from the Live and Let Die book. This is taken from. He disagreed with something that ate him.
It's a terrific. It's nice when they get the Fleming touches in.
Yeah, that's a great line.
Yeah, and it's better than you like. I'm glad that they've gone to the original text rather than trying to find some awful modern pun.
Well, I've written a few alternatives they could have used. Legless, sleeping it off. We all have a friend who was eaten by a shark. Here's Jaws.
Nice, very nice.
And here's a lone shark that bit his leg off. That last one needs work. Yeah, go on.
Maybe we raped and killed his wife.
Kiss, 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 France.
Yeah.
At least we put him in a plastic bag. I mean, that's very thoughtful. He obviously looked at the sofa. And
yeah, thought, yeah.
It's quite nice. Blood's tough to get out.
Yeah. It's like they've got like we've killed his wife and taken his leg, but you know sofas are a nightmare to clean.
But then we get our first bit of Dalton anger when the phone rings. And he picks it up and it's Grandel Bush on the phone, who says, "Hey, Felix, well, how's it going?" And he's like, "Call a bloody ambulance." And, so they all arrive, and one of the policemen's like, "Oh, I know what this is. It's a Colombian drug dealer thing. There's probably a chainsaw. I've seen loads of them." And that's when we get the great line of Sharky going, "Chainsaw my ass. It's a shark bite."
Yeah, he knows his stuff.
His left leg's gone below the knee. So they tell him that Sanchez is gone, and all of Felix's files are gone with him, and they can't do anything because it's out of their jurisdiction because he's gone back to Isthmus.
Which is one of those. There are certain like phrases from those from films and TV, and outside, it's outside your jurisdiction. Is one of those phrases. It's just it's one of the great. Just fucking stick that in the script. That'll do.
It's like Lethal Weapon 2's wonderful diplomatic immunity that gets used all the way through it.
Yeah, I once did a night where you have to do nothing but puns.
Right.
And the problem with it, like if you're just doing puns like that, they're almost reveling in how bad they are, but it means that if someone doesn't go with it, you can't sort of go, "I can rescue this with a different style of joke." You have to tell then an even worse pun. And I had a joke in an old notebook that was something like they're doing a dinosaur version of Lethal Weapon 2,
at the end of the film,
Joss Ackland says Diplodocus immunity.
I mean, that would be brilliant. I mean, if you'd have said that totally out of context.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of become a thing like me and my brothers. It's been it had always been diplomatic immunity. But then, that's now morphed into Diplodocus immunity, and it just makes you look mentally ill.
And now that's all I'll think of when I think of that film.
And so they say, "Let's go shark hunting." And it really sounds like he says cunting. It's like, "Let's go shark hunting."
Shark hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like one of the more controversial carry-on characters.
So they go to a warehouse. And he's like, "This is the last one in this neighbourhood." And it's Milton Crest's warehouse. And that's where we meet Milton Crest with his dodgy eye.
Yes.
And he's brilliant. I love him in this.
Oh, he's phenomenal. He looks like a Miami version of Windsor Davis. and it works. It works as a look. Or a sort of Joseph Fritzl on holiday. There's that kind of feel to it.
I'm just imagining him and Ed Asner doing Never the Twain for the American TV. so he knocks at the door, and that's when he says, "I'm James Bond, Universal Exports. I've been requisitioned by London Zoo to take possession of a Carcadian Carcadius."
Dalton's delivery of that Carcadius. He's a class act.
He really is. And then he says, "Please, I've come all the way from London." So they show him in, and then Milton Crest is like going, "Oh, as you can see, we're closing down our operations here. We don't have any more sharks." And then he's like, "Oh, that's a nice submarine." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, it's for sale, actually." And then Bond has a quick cursory look around, but because Dalton's a pro, his eyes stop at something, and then he carries on. And then he says, "Anyway, so as you can see, I'm very busy." And then I love this dismissive line when Bond says to him, "Anyway, it's nice to meet you, mister." And he goes, "Goodbye."
Yeah. It's nicely done, that.
But what Crest doesn't know, and what we know, is that Bond has noticed that there was a wedding, that the carnation that Felix was wearing at the wedding has been swept up into the corner. So he knows he was there.
Yeah, it's nice. I like to imagine that Felix and Della were having big arguments. Like, "We don't need to spend this much money on flowers."
During the Wobbly H.
Yeah.
So later that night, Bond and Sharky come back in a little dinghy. And then Bond sneaks in. Oh, and then we're shown that there are sharks still there because one of them pokes his head out and goes, all right.
Yeah.
But Bond goes up. And then
I really wish Bond delivered a line, if he'd said something like, I've already had enough problems with Jaws.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been great. Right down the camera.
Mm.
In a very old Dalton way.
Yeah.
So he goes up and starts looking around in the dark. And there's cocaine there.
Yeah, under the maggots.
Under the maggots, which are clearly not maggots. It's always bothered me. They look like it's clear to ear, and it is pasta.
Yeah, but yeah.
The way someone thought they look like maggots has always bothered me.
Yeah, like that's someone who has a very unhealthy relationship with food.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it's horrible.
Either that or their parents' Italian restaurant needs to be condemned by the council.
But he's sort of reaching around in there, pulling out the drugs, and then a guard turns up and puts the gun through the back. And then he says, can I take my hands out first? And then flings all the pasta in his face. And it always reminds me of that bit in Naked Gun when Drebin gets a pillow to the face.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh! That guy basically does that. And he punches him in the stomach and then flips him in there and shuts it.
Yeah.
And says, bon appetit.
Death by maggot pasta.
Yeah. Unless they're like really fucking genetically modified maggots or something.
Yeah.
Like mutated. Mutants.
And then one bloke gets whacked in an electric eel tank.
Yeah, which has got a nice sign on it saying danger electric eels, which is very
cool. Yeah. And then there's a bit, does he put a lobster in a tank? There's just one shot.
I think it just floats down as he walks past it, I think. Maybe he had it in his pants.
Right.
oh, bloody hell, that was stag night.
Yeah, I thought the crabs were bad enough.
Right down the camera again.
Yeah.
And then Killifer comes out, carrying his suitcase and holding a gun, like it's an accessory. He's always got this suitcase. And he's just about to shoot Bond when Sharky comes out of the trap door and knocks him over.
Yeah.
And he gets pushed, and now he's dangling in the sharks. And says, I'll split the money with you. And then we get that great line. Because you know how Roger Moore was always like, oh, I didn't like kicking that car off the side of For Your Eyes Only. It was a very un-Bond thing to do. And now you've got Dalton saying, you earned it. You earned it. Throwing it right at him so he falls in with all the sharks.
Yeah. And the delivery, the way he says, old buddy.
Old buddy.
And it reminds me a bit of Napoleon in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Ziggy Piggy, Ziggy Piggy. So after Killif has been dispatched, then Sharky says, what a waste. And Bond gives me a look like, what the fuck did you just say? And he's like, money.
Yeah. And like, yeah, if ever a look to camera should have been delivered, that's one.
I mean, this scene should have just been full of them. We've had three so far. So then he's walking around in Key West the next day, Bond. Him and Sharky are getting a boat, and they're going to go and look for the wave crest. And then Grandel Bush does this wonderful thing that you used to do at school, where he taps him on the shoulder, so he looks one way and appears at the other side of him.
Yeah,
he says, how are you doing? It's just that
the next thing he's going to do is flick him with a fountain pen and then spam him.
Oh, spamming! You don't hear about spamming anymore.
Yeah, it's a really lost art.
Yeah, it turned into happy slapping, and now that's gone.
Yeah.
Certainly, if you were a boy at school, luckily I wasn't one of them, with a large forehead, your days were hell.
Yeah.
You would get constantly spammed. But
it's like you could cover every base. You could have nothing that could be taken the piss out of. Your clothing could be immaculate. Your name doesn't rhyme with anything inappropriate, but all it takes is a bare palm to your forehead, and you're in social Siberia.
And the word spam.
Yeah.
That and also
then there would
one...
be the variations. There would be the round the world spam, or also known as the Irish spam.
What's the Irish? I don't know.
It's just as in you just hit someone on the back of the head rather than the forehead.
Right, okay. You were in Boreham Wood, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I was bushy.
Is this the thing? In the stuff that my mum's that has come from my mum's shed, There was a box I took home a few months ago that had all my old Dungeons and Dragons stuff.
Wow.
Which is almost entirely bought from Beatty's on Watford High Street.
There you go. Yeah.
In the late 80s. And there was this set of gazetteers. There were 14 of them. And I was thinking, I'll stick them on eBay, see what, if anyone would be remotely interested. Hmm. And someone paid for these 14 things, someone paid 650 quid.
Jesus Christ.
So I was, slightly blown away by that.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Because I remember he's at my mate James Carter, who also lived in Bushy. Mm. This was in 1988. We did a sponsored 24-hour Dungeons and Dragons role playing session,
right?
To raise money for children with special needs, ironically enough. and so this has all come flooding back. These old sort of where the boxes are slightly caved in, or yeah. You've like written the name of your character, and you know like. Had a dwarf called Bob Small. And it's like this classic little bits of nerdery where I found an old character sheet and I haven't written it in as Dungeons and Dragons. I've written it in as Dragons and Dungeons.
Nice.
It's, you know, when you kind of love and hate your future, your previous self.
Yeah, don't label me. I don't like Dungeons and Dragons. I like Dragons and Dungeons.
And Dungeons. Should we play Dragons and Dungeons?
What's
Fuck
that?
Off, Steve.
Is that a new game?
Yeah. And there was a really brilliant one we played called Top Secret that was an espionage role playing game. So, taken so much out of the Bond universe, and I really preferred it to D&D. I still love D&D, but there was something about particularly in that time where you know Bond was so steeped in Britishness.
Yes,
that being a spy. Was really fucking great. Yeah. So that's the only thing I've kept. It's the only thing I'm not going to stick on eBay is the top secret stuff.
I mean, these days it's about leaving things in tapas bars. It's not as
exciting.
But Grand Ale Bush. Thank you for mentioning Beatty's in Watford High Street, though. I'd forgotten about it.
Yeah, it's because I'm okay. There's a Just the Tonic Comedy Club on Watford. So that's my main experience of Watford High Street is doing that club every now and then. And it is kind of, you know, obviously so much of it has changed.
Mm. Yeah, I remember I bought from Beatty's. Do you remember when Alien 3 came out?
Yeah.
I bought a Airfix model of the alien that I built. And
fantastic. Oh, that's really great.
Yeah. Oh, God. Anyway. So, yeah, Grand Ole Bush says, we found a little bit of killer fur. And then Bond's like, oh, well, at least someone's doing their job. And he's like, and then he just says that wicked, really good line. It's over, Commander. And then he points him to Hemingway House.
Yes.
Where he goes in and sees M.
Yeah.
He says, this you were supposed to be in Istanbul last night.
I forget that Grand Ole Bush, this is a bit where they talk about keys of coke.
That's right, yeah.
And that's one of those things, it's so of its time.
Yeah,
again, those phrases that feel like they're just in the lexicon, and you wonder, like, at some point, who's the first person who sort of said, "I'm the first person who said keys instead of kilograms." Everyone's, no, I never get the bloody recognition. So he's in Hemingway House, and it's quite like, because obviously there's always a mild bollocking that he gets, but this is like a proper bollocking.
Yeah. You were supposed to be in Istanbul last night. And then he says, I've got business to finish here, sir. He says, let the Americans clean it up. It's their mess, but they're not going to do anything, sir. And then he says, well, you've got to go. And he goes, in that case, you'll have my resignation. And then we get, this is not a country club 007.
It's a terrific line. Again, delivered brilliantly.
Yes. I love this M. He's not as good as Bernard Lee, but he's bloody good.
Yeah.
And then he says, the other great line, which I'll always remember forever, effective immediately, your license to kill is revoked.
Yeah, which again reminds me of diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, diplomatic immunity.
Has been revoked.
Got decaffeinated.
With the Hemingway thing, I really wanted there to be a farewell to arms and legs.
Yes, that would have been good.
Again, down the camera.
Right down the camera, yeah. And then he also says, I need not remind you that you're still bound by the Official Secrets Act. Lovely. And then Bond's about to hand his gun, kicks someone in the stomach, and then jumps over the side and runs off. And then M says, there are too many people. And then he says, God help you, Commander.
Yes! And the too many people thing, it really feels a bit like that's M's views on immigration.
But meanwhile, on Milton Crest's boat, Lupe is on board and Crest has had too much to drink.
Yeah, this is some really good drunk acting, this.
Mm. Yeah, he's really horribly creepy and horrible.
Yeah.
As he kind of leers over her and says, he really stuck his neck out trying to save you. Maybe, and I did as well. Maybe you could give me something in return. And she's like, you're drunk, get out. It's horrible.
Leave me alone, Windsor.
Yeah. Oh, you're a lovely, lovely girl. Oh.
Yeah.
Shut up, he says as he turns up the TV. Bond then goes in. Oh, this is my favourite bit as well. I mentioned it in the other podcast, but it does make me laugh that a guard calls him and says, sir, there's something you have to see. And he goes and looks in. It's a manta ray.
Yeah.
And he's almost incredulously like, have you not seen a manta ray before?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's Bond's underneath it, hiding.
It's a brilliant discovery. Look, Captain, a fishy. It's a fishy.
I've just seen a fish. How long have you worked here? Oh, it's my first day. So they're doing this really extravagant drug swap that a robot submarine takes the money to the drug dealers. They then take the money out and load the robot submarine with drugs. I mean, that just seems like, if you were watching this, that seems more conspicuous than just literally parking next door and throwing each other in the back. But yeah, they do it anyway. But Bond sabotages it. Well, first he breaks into the boat and then goes to see Lupe and puts a knife to her throat. And this is very, again, something you can't imagine Roger doing or any other Bond.
Yeah.
A knife to a woman's throat and saying, make a noise and you're dead.
Yeah. And then he sees the bruises, doesn't he?
Yes.
Which again, the bruise, the vein of nastiness is, it's just really, it's brilliantly horrible to watch.
And also he says, it's Sanchez's way, and then he goes, you seem to like it. I was like, oh, bloody hell, all right. then someone knocks at the door. It's Crest, isn't it? He says there's someone's on board because Bond locks someone in a cupboard. And Bond's got a knife to her back and she says, I haven't seen anything, and closes the door. And then he looks out the window and then it's daytime now.
Because she could sort of say, I haven't seen anything. All I've seen is you at my door drunkenly trying to fuck me, you creepy old bastard.
Yeah.
But she's got an alibi.
Yeah, exactly. But Bond looks out the window and sees Sharky's boat being pulled in, and he's hung up like a dead shark.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's, again, even though you know in the Bond world most of his colleagues will not last, but it's still upsetting to see Sharky like that.
Yeah, and then one of them says, hey, you know the funny thing? His name was Sharky. And Bond's like, stay here. And he goes out and grabs a harpoon, and then we get compliments of Sharky.
Yeah.
Fires a harpoon right into the guy. And then he goes down and we have a little underwater fight, which is really good.
Have you ever scuba dived?
No.
I did it once on holiday. We did an open water course. It was in Fiji. And the diving instructor clearly fancied my wife. And so was saying to him, he was like going, oh, you're wonderful, you're a mermaid. And I was very nervous. And he was just openly taking the piss out of me. He was just like going, this is you in the water, and like doing what would, not a million miles away from a Joey Deacon impression of me. And to the point where I'm like, well, this is great. This is really building my confidence. And he was like an ex-army bloke. And his email address, I can't remember the exact email address, but he was, this gets across what he was like. It was slightly mad Mike whatever email address. But the idea of like, I'm slightly mad Mike.
Sorry, I've just got the image of him doing a Joey Deacon impression.
Yeah, and like, literally, with, and I'm, because like I remember my eyes being like saucers because I was struggling to like get the, you know, the breathing gear in, and where you have that, where you, you know, you're trying to deal with the adrenaline rush, and then you get someone doing an impression that you've not seen anyone do since 1983.
And that's end of part one of this episode of Smirshpod. We'll be back later in the week with part two, so please stick around. But in the meantime, why not like, subscribe, review, enjoy, share, tell everybody you like. And, you know, why not even buy Thunderbug? Hey, why not? See you next time.
If you're a fan of all things geeky, you're going to love Concessions, a brand new podcast by comedian Matt Hunton and myself, Beck Hill, where we interview your favourite cult heroes at Comic-Cons all across the world. We've got stars from Star Wars, Harry Potter, The Walking Dead and more. Make sure you tune in soon to Concessions.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.